But I'm not gonna let them catch me, no. Not gonna let them catch the Midnight Rider.
Chris McMichael.
Yeah!
Sports Radio 101.
All right, I had a day to clear my head. I feel better.
WFAN.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 12:02. McMonagle here with you on the fan, 888-808-1019, that's the number. You should be used to that number by now, right? I don't have to give it 3-4 times an hour, do I? Let's just do it one more time, 888-808-1019. I got you for 5 hours as we ride through this Tuesday morning all the way to the warm-up show. Fliegelman on the other side. And here we are. Both baseball teams, I would say, going in opposite directions. We've kind of been saying that for the entire season almost. But the Mets can't deal with it either. Can't seem to deal with that prosperity there. Huddled right around that 500 mark. Can't seem to get a game better than that as they drop the afternoon game in Pittsburgh and go 4-4 on that 8-game road trip against Washington and Pittsburgh. And ultimately, you know, could you call it a successful road trip the way Nimmo did? I'm going to get into some other things Nimmo had to say right here in the open. But you did accomplish the idea that now you do have the tiebreaker over Pittsburgh, considering the previous series and now this one. And, of course, Washington, as of right now, have the tiebreaker. You're going to roll right into a homestand to lead into this All-Star break, which is obviously important. And you have an opportunity to continue to hold the tiebreaker over Washington. And, you know, for the Mets, it's interesting because Nimmo talked about as well as that he was satisfied with a 4-4, especially against the pitching they went up against. But watching this game, right? And we know the bullpen of the New York Mets and the New York Yankees and everyone in Major League Baseball who's looking to add or trade or subtract or like. Bullpen pitching seems to be on the forefront of this trade deadline. And watching this game with the Mets, yes, the offense cooled off a little bit, right? You get the big home run from Nimmo on a 3-0 count, the first time in his career that he put a 3-0 pitch in play, let alone hit one for a home run, which is remarkable. But he hits the home run to tie the game, and then right away, obviously, Christian Scott out there pitching a great game. And let me just say this about Yankee fans, Met fans, Aaron Boone. If Aaron Boone took out a starting pitcher who had given up one hit, albeit a two-run home run in the game, in the fifth inning, with two outs, and he got them rather easily, nobody on, and he took out that pitcher to bring in a pitcher making his major league debut, and they end up scoring 5 runs in that inning, I have a feeling Yankee fans would have a major problem with how Aaron Boone handled that inning. And I understand why they did it. We can get into why they pushed him in his previous start to 95, 99 pitches, whatever it was, knowing that he was going to be on regular rest and they were going to want to taper it down. We all understand that. But watching the game, watching this team, and in my mind, have already made the decision to look to add to this Met team. Now, I can't tell you how Stearns feels. I can't tell you how the owner feels. I can't tell you if every decision has been made on what they want to do, considering where they are, considering how many other teams will be aggressive in the free in the reliever market, considering how desperate they might be. The amount of, you know, you go into seasons in different times as a franchise with different meanings. We know the Yankees, whether come hell or high water, wherever they are in the standings, come the trade deadline, and I wouldn't expect them to be too, like, out of it necessarily, but they might even be worse off than they are right now, if you can imagine that. We know what the Yankees are going to attempt to do because of where everything is, because of what they need, because this is the year that they've dedicated. They traded for Soto. You don't know how long they're going to have Soto. They have Judge and Cole in the prime of their careers. Like, this is a go out there and try and win type season. For the Mets, heading into this year with all the different things that they talked about and building while trying to compete and building up a farm system, I don't know how eager they are to trade away for relief pitching. But watching this game, it's clear that, yes, the offense has cooled off and it hasn't been as dynamic as it was maybe a week ago, 5 days ago. it's cooled off a bit and ultimately didn't score enough runs in this game and didn't score enough runs in these eight games, quite honestly. But it's quite clear what they have, what they don't have, and what they desperately need. And yes, add them to the list of the myriad of teams right now who might consider themselves contenders who are looking for relief pitching. But as that game happens, it's that, and they mentioned on the broadcast, and it's actually really an interesting stretch as we do head into these last couple of series for both teams heading into the All-Star break, as the Mets now will welcome in Washington and Colorado before we go to the All-Star game and see Pete Alonso in the home run derby. You knew he wouldn't miss it. And we'll have some fun with that over the course of these 5 hours. But it's such a weird dynamic because it's the one thing that's crippling them. And it's the one thing that's costing them games. And it's been like that all year. And yes, Diaz is back now from his 10-game suspension. And yes, not many times do you think you can have to turn, you know, to Eric Orsi and his major league debut in big spots like that. You should be better than that in most spots. But ultimately, no one in this bullpen, outside of maybe Daniel Nunez, do you really trust? And as you watch them blow games, it's this weird dynamic of watching a team that you have faith in almost everything else, right? We've talked about the idea of trading and selling, you know, selling and buying all in the same breath because of the depth that you have in the rotation. And Christian Scott furthers that, having another great start. He was pretty good his first start. Now he's had a, you know, he's 6 runs, 2 innings on 1 hit. In this start, or 5 2/3, should I say? It could have been 6, but 5 2/3 of 1 hit baseball and 2 runs. I mean, you've seen, you know, Peterson kind of figure things out here and get it together. Severino, besides maybe his last outing was pretty bad, has been terrific. And you know that the depth inside this rotation gives you a chance with your starting pitcher. You got Senga coming back, and you don't necessarily need anything else to compete in this NL wildcard race. And you know the lineup that's been as dynamic as any in the entire sport over the last, you know, month and a half as they've gone on this run that has thrusted themselves right back into the mix and hovering right above 500 without necessarily being able to really hurdle that marker. But you know you trust the offense. There is one aspect of this team that is simultaneously hurting your ability to stay in the race and, quite honestly, perfectly explaining what you need to stay in it. And that's why the rest of these games are so fascinating, and why heading into this Washington series, welcoming the Nationals back into the building, is so important. And it's so important to go beat Colorado. And it's so important to play well until June 30th. And it's so important for this offense and guys like Brandon Nimmo, who are needling the owner and telling everybody who'll listen, who has a say in the matter, that they should be adding, we should be adding, we should be adding. This is the same group that at the beginning of the year spent the entire spring training trying to tell us they're better than we're being told and they're better than everybody thinks they are. And then the same group that rallied around a meeting and suddenly has now propelled themselves since that meeting into being a dynamic offense and Lindor taking leadership and Nimmo being about as clutch as any player in baseball. And as we go over his numbers over the last 2 days, as he's been an all-star snub, and we talk about his war and we talk about his this and his that, I can tell you he's driving in a hell of a lot of runs, more than I thought Nimmo could drive in. And he's got a power surge right now that I didn't expect. And up and down this lineup, you're getting quality at-bats, whether it's from guys like, you know, Taylor filling in, whether, you know, obviously Vientos has changed things. We know who's come in here and changed this lineup. But as you get through these games, and as much as Nimmo might tell you 4-4 is pretty good considering who they're pitching against and playing against, and yes, they did at least accomplish the idea of now they own the tiebreaker against the Pittsburgh Pirates. That was kind of check one going into it. But ultimately, if they are going to go 4-4 over 8 in the middle of the stretch, I don't know how good it is. I don't know how much they're going to need to outperform what they've already accomplished to make sure that this owner and this GM are willing to go buy and go buy significantly. Because I just don't know. And I understand there's tea leaves, and I understand that many people think that, hey, it's the market. What are you going to do? You can't ignore this type of thing. You can't ignore them playing this way. I don't know. I have no idea what Stearns has in his mind. Stearns could very easily say, you know what? They're probably good enough to stay in it the whole way. That's kind of all we promised the fan base. That's all we were looking for this year. I have bigger plans for moving in the future. And honestly, I just don't know if I trust what I have in the depth of this rotation. I don't know if I trust a lineup that's been wildly inconsistent this year. And I don't know if I trust the team necessarily to go move all my chips or go move big chips or go move a good portion of my chips to help bolster this offense when I know I'm going against the Dodgers. I know I'm going against the Braves who are getting hot. I know I'm going against Philadelphia who's got the best record in baseball. I'm going through a very top-heavy National League, and is it worth it to me? Is it worth it to me? So if Nimmo wants to needle him, that's fine. And if Nimmo wants to try and make it clear that he thinks the Mets should be looking out on the trade deadline market to go acquire a reliever who they desperately need. Well, then it's up to this offense, namely, to go outscore everybody else over the next 2 weeks and to go in and take care of business against Washington and then go beat one of the only few teams who are out of it in the National League in the Colorado Rockies and, you know, start the second half the same way as you've ended the first because we don't know what they're going to do. And watching that game last night is the exact epitome of the catch-22 of this team. Are they good enough? Is this bullpen in the stretch of 3 weeks good enough to keep it afloat? To make sure this GM adds to the bullpen that's hurting them? I don't know, but I find it fascinating. And I think right now there's a lot of talk about all-stars and there's a lot of talk about snubs and there's a lot of talk about Pete Alonso and the home run derby. And we'll have it ourselves at 888-808-1019. But for me, it comes down to what it's always come down to for the New York Mets is how well can they play until July 30th and convince, you know, the man from Milwaukee, as he's called in the afternoon sometimes, this guy with a plan, this guy who has an idea for the future and the stability of a franchise, how much of a dent is he willing to put in that plan to make sure this team that's played as well as any in the National League over the last month has an opportunity to possibly do something special in what is undoubtedly a crapshoot that they call the Major League Playoffs. 888-808-1019. Then we'll get to the Yankees as well, who obviously now go into a stretch, obviously probably even more important than what the Mets are going through right now, just for their own saneness. As they are about, I don't think saneness is a word, their own sanity. As they are about to take on their two big rivals, a team that has really given them problems over the last decade in the Tampa Bay Rays. And then, of course, the division-leading Baltimore Orioles for a three-game set right before the All-Star break. And we could talk about, oh, how many wins do they need? Do they need to win this series? Do they need to win that series? What they need to do is stabilize themselves. And I know I went off on Boone last night. I'm as frustrated as the way they've played as anybody is. I'm as frustrated as the lackadaisical nonsense that we have seen over the last 2 weeks, specifically, probably going back even further than that, but really specifically the last handful of situations we have come across in the last 2 weeks of laziness, inability to hustle, being boneheaded on the base paths, all of it. I'm as frustrated as anybody, and there's no one else to point the finger to more on that front than the manager. Having said that, the level of noise around the conversation of firing Aaron Boone is what gets me in trouble because it's just they're not going to fire him, nor should they. He needs to be the one to turn this around, and he doesn't have to do it publicly. I was literally just watching Terry Francona. I was literally just watching Terry Francona on SNY as I was walking in, and he said himself, you don't have to do it publicly. Now, there's got to be ramifications. I get it, but I just find it hard to believe. Sometimes it's on the players. Like, what needs to happen is they need to go into the series, and these guys who have been awful need to play better. And they can't, like, the veteran DJ LeMahieu needs to not make blunders in the field and hang his head and act like he's a sad kid who just lost his puppy. Like, those things need to change no matter what Aaron Boone does or no matter who the manager is. And I don't think there's a magic wand or anything he could say publicly or someone else you could bring in. And we'll get through all the names that have been bandied about. Of course, Buck Showalter. For guys who could come in and step in and take the reins of this Yankee team and suddenly, boop, the Yankees would just skyrocket to the top because all they need is for someone to say, hey, you can't do that. Like Aaron Boone's not doing that. Like Aaron Boone is just sitting around doing jack squat. But what they need to do in these last two series before the end of this first half is just establish that they can play good baseball. Because I'm still not at the panic mode point. Now, if they get swept in these six games, maybe I will be. And I don't know if there is a number they need. Do they need to go 2-4? Do they need to go 3-3? Do they need to win both series? I don't know. What I need to see is good baseball. That's what I need. I need to see crisp, clean baseball. I need to see this offense do something. And I need to see the starting pitching feel good. Like, I need this rotation to feel stabilized. They're on their way to being there. We know that the bullpen is what it is, right? We know that. We know that they need arms in the bullpen. We know the bottom of the offense is really struggling. And we know the rotation had been one of the best in all of baseball and is starting, hopefully, to round back into form what you've seen from Severino, what you've seen from Nestor Cortez. Even Rodon's last time out was at least a little bit better, a little bit more promising, and we all expect Cole to figure it out. So if they can get some well-pitched games, you know, Judge and Soto can kind of wake up because they're both in a little bit of slumps here, and this offense can just look like a good baseball team, and they can figure out a way to just play clean, crisp baseball. We'll see. The wins will probably take care of themselves, and maybe we'll start to feel better heading into this thing. But obviously, both teams are in desperate need of help come the trade deadline. Both teams are in desperate need of bullpen to start. We'll get into some other things and some of the possibilities that the Yankees can do more specifically within the infield or anywhere else come the trade deadline. But this is the last chance before we get the break of the All-Star game to really get a good look at what these two teams can be. And for the Mets, can they play well enough to incentivize their GM to probably go outside of his comfort zone and make sure this team has a chance? And then can this Yankee team get it together, show us, show their manager, show everybody that they have respect for the game, have respect for themselves, and have respect for Aaron Boone that they claim they do, and actually learn how to play some clean, crisp baseball? Because it's not just about losing, it's about the embarrassment they've become. And that's what we're looking for as we embark on this stretch of a road trip for the Yankees and a homestand for the Mets leading into the All-Star break and the Home Run Derby with Pete Alonso on Monday.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered! Derek Jeter homers to tie the game, and there it is, hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
So I guess the question on the table as we look at it here on this Monday, I know the Mets played today, but it was so early in the afternoon that it kind of feels like we haven't seen baseball in a while. So as we look ahead to these last six games before the break, which team needs them worse? It's actually an interesting question because the Yankees are playing two divisional opponents, including the team they're chasing for the division title, on the road, in the middle of a absolute free fall where the manager's job is probably, I mean, listen, in my mind, it's safe for the year. I think, obviously, if things don't go well here, there's a better than good chance. I mean, he won't be back. It's the end of his contract. It'll be the same as Girardi. They just won't bring him back. But, I mean, I guess there is a depth that they could hit where Boone gets fired, and it's as close to him being fired as it ever has been over the course of his tenure at the New York Yankees. And obviously within the state of free fall they're in right now, where they haven't won back-to-back games in a month and haven't won a series in a month, that if they absolutely just get pounded here, a lot could change. But even if they do, and this is the case for these Met games being more important, even if they do, even if the Yankees lose all six, right? And that would put them at the best six games out of first. I don't think it knocks them out of playoff contention. And ultimately, it won't change Brian Cashman's opinion on the team. That's the difference. The difference is, no matter what happens here, I don't know if Brian Cashman will be deterred of trying to just bolster this team and make it a championship caliber team. I just don't think there's any way around attempting to do that. I don't think they could play their way out of it and where Brian Cashman says, hey, I don't trust this team, I'm not trading prospects away. I don't think they can get to that point. I really don't. Not for these six games, at least. Where I just don't know. Everyone seems like, I was listening to Keith, heard a couple calls with him, even Keith's opinion. Like, I get that it just seems that they've proved enough, and you would think that this general manager is going to acquire people, and they've even talked about maybe, you know, selling and buying at the same time. And I've kind of moved off my stance of that doesn't make sense at all, because just as this market is going to be so late developing, maybe there is a chance that teams who are desperate to improve in a certain area and without any dance partners of the typical variety of trading prospects for a veteran or something along those lines, which is typical of the trade deadline, if we find ourselves in a market where nobody, you know, considers themselves out of it necessarily, or there's only so many, you know, brides at the ball, maybe teams will be forced to do maneuvers like, I'll trade you Severino for your closer. Maybe that is something where it's plausible. I don't know. And maybe I'll trade you Gleyber Torres for something. Maybe I need to be more open to that idea than I've been prior, because it just doesn't make any sense to me. But we'll see how that works. But ultimately, I don't know how Stearns thinks. We don't know. It's his first year. We have no idea. And if the Mets don't play well here, and if the Mets can't figure it out, and this bullpen that they desperately need to fix is what sinks them, and they fall 4 or 5 games out of the wild card, I don't know how Stearns reacts to that. So when you look at the season, the reason I'll tell you that, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, it might be more important for the Mets to play well in these six games than even the Yankees, is because I don't think the Yankees will not change their plans. The plans are locked in. World Series or bust. That's it. Now, these six games might be telling on whether or not that is an eventually possible successful endeavor, but it won't deter them from trying to make the changes that will need to be made to make that a possibility. Where the Mets, they might say, hey, look, we competed. We'll still compete. I don't believe this team will just fold up, but it's at a point where it's not worth trading away the assets we've acquired to help this team on short-term deals when I'm rather just build for the future. So we've got a couple of meaningful, important series for both teams leading into this All-Star break. And I can't wait to get back on the field for the Yankees. Unlike most, I saw a bunch of jokes, oh, the Yankees can't lose tonight. Oh, such a stress-free night without the Yankees. No! I want them back on the field. I want to see it start to turn around. Like, I know it will. I know it will. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Mario in Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
Hey, what's up, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Yeah. Good show. Good monologue.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. Quick thing. First, on the Mets, I think maybe they're not going to do anything, because I think they probably want to try to, at the end of the year, use all their money to get Soto if they can.
That really doesn't matter to what they do now. The money will be there. I mean, yeah, I don't think they will take on like some long, big impact contracts. I think you're probably right with that. But could they take on a reliever? Could they take on, you know, yeah, I mean, the money's coming off the books with Scherzer and Verlander. It doesn't look like Verlander is going to hit that 140 inning limit that would leave them on the hook for more money. So they're going to get less. They're going to get even more money off the books from Verlander than they probably estimated heading into the year. So I would think the money for Soto is going to be there no matter what they do at the trade deadline. I really don't think that has much of an impact.
I agree. My take on the Yankees is this: I'm looking positive. I'm a diehard like you are.
There you go, man.
You know?
I like to look positive. I have to admit, something inside me broke on Friday, and I'm struggling to stay positive. But I'm trying my best.
I think we're going on a winning streak, and I'll tell you why.
Please do. This is
the reason why.
Okay.
Here's number one, Ben Rice.
Yes.
Right. Is his first name Ben? Ben. Is it Ben Rice?
It's Ben Rice. You diehard fan. You. No, I'm just kidding. Good. Yes, it's Ben Rice.
No, I forgot the first name.
It happens to me all the time.
But, you know, he is very promising. very promising. And let's not forget what Lewis Gill did. Now, he looked to go back to the way he was before. If he can go back to the way he was before, and I see Cole coming back now,
yeah,
and he's going to get that way. And let's not forget one thing that nobody's been saying. Judge is in a mini slump. He's going to jump out of that soon.
Yeah.
If he jumps out of that, and we have all these other pieces.
And Soto's hitting under 200 in his last 18 games.
He's always another one.
So he needs to come out of it too. Yeah.
It's not going to stay that way. They're going to play better, and I could see them turning it around. And at the end of the year, I think they're going to have 100 wins, and I think I'm seeing World Series. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, Mario, I love you. I hope that's the case. I'm down. I mean, listen, how could you not be down on them right now? That's a very positive view. Do I think they're going to be this bad forever? No. I don't necessarily know if I see a winning streak coming. I hope so. That would be something. If this Yankee team wins 5 out of these 6 games, I think we'll all take a big deep breath heading into the All-Star break. But there's no doubt they're going to turn it around. There's no doubt. And you know what makes me laugh, too? Let me just get on this, too, because I can't stand, like, I heard Evan talking about this today. I've heard a bunch of people on social media talking about this because Aaron Boone used some of the same terminology he used a couple years ago with the "it's right there in front of us." And, I mean, like, nobody's ever used the same cliched lines. They're cliches for a reason because they get used often. So the idea that Aaron Boone says the same thing when they're going through a bad stretch, I mean, again, show me a manager who's good at a press conference when they've lost 16 out of 22. Show me the good press conference manager there. It's so stupid to me. I'm more concerned with what happens on the field than I am what happens in the postgame, but that's fine. But what bothers me and what makes me laugh a little bit, and this is where, you know, I'm going to get in trouble with Yankee fans again. We heard this in 22. Oh, yeah, it's right there in front of us. What happened in 22? What happened in 22? What happened in 22? Because maybe I have a different memory. I don't know. What happened in 22? Yeah, they lost in the ALCS. In 2022, they were in an enormous funk. He slammed the table, said it's right there in front of us, and they won 99 games, won the division, and played in the ALCS. Why are we acting like in 2022 they fell apart and missed the playoffs or something? Now, did they ultimately lose? Yes, to the Astros, who went on to win the World Series. Who they can't beat. They can't beat in 17, they can't beat in 19, and yes, they can't beat in 22. But the idea that, oh my God, it's going to be the same as 2022. I hope so. I honestly hope so. I hope they win 99 games and win a division and are playing in the ALCS. Wait, sign me up for it right now. Sign me up for ending the regular season just like 2022. 99 wins, win me the division, boom. Where do I sign? Do you need my social security number? My wife's my emergency contact. What else can I fill out on that form? Because I'm in. So please, yes, they ended up losing just like every year from now until 09. I got it. I know. They haven't won a World Series. Stop acting like 2022 was like the season from hell because they got off to a good start and then went through a slump. Very much like this year. Sure, it's playing out exactly the same. And I hope it finishes the same as far as the regular season goes. Give me 99 wins in a division. I'll take it. We talk about 2022 like it was... I know they didn't win a World Series. I know they got swept by the Astros. It was embarrassing. I was embarrassed. It was terrible. But they didn't collapse. They bounced back. They won the division. They won a playoff series. They were in the ALCS. Just like 20... Oh my God, it's going to be 2022 all over again. As far as the regular season goes, sign me up. Vince in Staten Island. What's up, Vince?
Hey, C-Mac, how's it going?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Serenity now. Serenity now.
I know, I'm trying.
What in heaven's name was Mendoza thinking? I mean, why are you... I mean, he did it. It was a nice sprint. I will give him that. It was a nice sprint out of the dugout to pull Scott for... And who are you again? I mean, come on.
Well, listen, obviously, he put himself in a predicament by pushing him in the previous start on July 5th, right? So he starts him, He goes, he pushes him a little bit. They knew he was going to be on short rest for the regular rest, should I say, for the first time in his major league career, which was going to lead to a pitch number. And I get it. It's nobody on and two out. But to bring in a kid who's never pitched in the major leagues to face 2-3-4 in the Pittsburgh order, I mean, it was a puzzling decision. Now, they are also down relievers. They had, you know, their best relievers pitch multiple days in a row, so you weren't going to use Diaz, right, and you weren't going to use Nunez, so it was limited in who you were going to use. But yes, that is a interesting spot. And as a Yankee fan, and I hate to make everything about the Yankees, I know you Mets fans don't want to hear it, but I just have to say it because it's just in me. If Aaron Boone made that decision, it would be the whole show. We would be screaming about how ridiculous it was for Aaron Boone to bring in someone making their major league debut against the middle of the Pittsburgh lineup in the sixth inning. But, you know, it is what it is. He felt like he had no choice. It was only the six. He was going to save the other guys he had in the bullpen for later because he was short a couple. And he brought in a kid, what he thought was a spot to steal an out and get the kid's, you know, career underway, get one out with nobody on, and, you know, with two outs and nobody on, he thought he could get through it. And it turned out to be a terrible decision.
Terrible decision. And Scott, well, he could have thrown one pitch and got a pop-up.
That is true.
Give him that batter. His use of the bullpen, it's like, okay, you got to stop managing by the supercomputer. I mean, it's just like...
Well, they had a number in mind for how many pitches, and they didn't want to get him to a long pitching battle. It seems silly to us, and I understand that. But it's not just Mendoza. It's not just Boone. This is all the baseball who does it this way now.
Oh, yes. It's all by the supercomputer.
Well, I mean, there's just... They had a certain number in their minds, and if he gets into a 10-12 pitch at bat and blows through the pitch count, and then, you know, they're going to be frustrated. Then, plus, if that happens and he gives up a hit, they probably already had it in their minds to bring in this young kid. Now, if they do it, and now there's a runner on, and he's pitching straight from the stretch, and there's just maybe it's a worse spot for the kid. They thought they had an opportunity to bring him in, nobody on, two outs. They got him out with the pitch count they wanted. It just felt like the right move at the time, and obviously, yeah, it blew up.
And one last question: if they decide to sell. Now, naturally, if you sell, you go to trade Pete, you're going to trade JD, you're going to trade Luke.
I don't know if you're going to trade Pete necessarily, but yes, you're going to trade. I would think there's a market for Manoah. Let's go from least likely to be traded to the most likely. I would think there's a market for Quintana and Manoah. I definitely think there's a market for Severino, and there is 100% a market for JD Martinez.
Now, what would you get from them? Verlander and Scherzer, these are two Hall of Famers, and you've got prospects that are like AA. Okay, well, we'll wait five more years for them to come out.
Oh, no, same. That's what you're going to get for this, too. That's what you're going to get for these guys, too.
Well, 1979 all over again.
No, well, I think... And that is a mischaracterization of what you got for... I mean, You got the best prospect in the Houston farm system for Verlander. I mean, you got Acuna for Severino. I mean, not for Severino. Excuse me, for Scherzer. I mean, it's guys you might not see this year, okay, but it's not some sort of project single A guys that you're not going to see for 5 years. I think that's unfair. I would suspect you're going to see most of these guys next season. At the bare minimum, you might see them, especially if they're selling in your scenario, you might see them this year. So I think that's unfair. Considering the money that you ate to get the prospects you got, I think they handled it beautifully. And they got big-time prospects. So I think you're mischaracterizing what they actually did last year. But this year, I don't think you get much. I mean, you get a couple of prospects. Maybe one you're going to get a couple of prospects for JD Martinez. Not the level you got for Scherzer and Verlander, true. I wouldn't think, but... Doesn't mean they can't be productive players for you down the stretch, but you got to build a farm system. And those are pieces that are 1 year. You could still sign them next year if you like them to stay at 79 all over again. These are not pieces that might be the team anyway next year, whether you sell them or keep them for this stretch run. I mean, there's no Severino's not guaranteed to be a Met next year. And even if you trade him, you love him, you could bring him back in free agency. But I don't think they're selling. I would not sell. I think their past selling would be my guess. I don't know. I guess the selling and buying is still open because that way you could still sell. You're improving the team. I don't think they're just straight up selling. They're too close. They've played too well. I just don't. They would have to fall on their face these last 2.5 weeks. Just absolutely fall on their face. 3 weeks. Anything short of that, I don't think they're selling. The question is, will they buy or just say, hey, we didn't want to break up the team. You guys have been playing good. Go take a shot at it. But will they honestly add? Will they go get a Tanner Scott? Will they go really, you know, you could get middle relievers. You can get other arms that might do better than what the bottom of this bullpen's doing. That's not what I'm talking about. That might happen regardless. Fine. And maybe those pan out and change your season. I'm open to that. But are you really going to trade prospects for the top-of-the-line closer? Are you going to be as motivated as the Yankees? Are you going to be as motivated as maybe the Houston Astros, although their bullpen is in better standing than some of these other teams? But are you going to be as motivated as some of these other teams chasing it, like legitimately chasing it? As motivated as the Baltimore Orioles? You're going to be as motivated as those teams who feel like they're right on the precipice of a championship. And you guys are, this was supposed to be a nice, fun season at the start of a retooling and a restocking of the farm system and of the organization to build a sustained winner. That's the plan. That's the plan. A is to shape this organization top to bottom so that sustained winning over the next handful of years is not any longer some sort of pipe dream. Making the playoffs back-to-back years won't be celebrated the way it is now. That's what they want to change. They want playoffs every year. They want to be a farm system and an operation run like the Dodgers, where they still have a great farm system, where you have kids who come up and help, you have pieces for trades, and you build a great team, and you spend money, and you're the whole package. That's what they're trying to do. And they're in the first year of Stern's, you know, start of that process. Plan B was to not embarrass themselves, give their fans something to watch, and give this team a chance in the crapshoot that is Major League Baseball playoffs and see what happens. Those were the two plans. There's Plan A and then the sidecar, Plan B. But if they get close enough, Plan B might affect Plan A. But I think they have to get close enough. I don't think it's a guarantee they'll go out and really add top of the market, top of this trade deadline market players, unless they're convinced. Morris in Brooklyn, what's up, Morris?
Good, how are you, C-Mac?
Hey, I'm doing good, Morris. How are you?
I'm doing great. In regards to Aaron Boone, I want to say that he's not entirely the problem, but he's definitely part of it, because the way he interacts with his players and the way that the players interact with him, it's kind of like they love him because he's like one of the boys. Like, they call him Booney and all that.
Yeah.
But they need, you know what I'm talking about. He's kind of like a counselor. Like a counselor for like kids in camp. And like he has fun with them, but they respect him. The problem is that if there's a problem in the team, like someone like Gleyber Torres or makes stupid mistakes like that, you need someone that a manager that the players are afraid of. They respect him because they're afraid of him, like a veteran manager, and he's not that.
Right? Do you think that Paul O'Neill was afraid of Joe Torre?
I don't think he was afraid of him. I think he would be afraid to mess around. Yeah,
Not of Joe Torre. I think those guys were afraid of Jorge Posada. I think those guys were afraid of Derek Jeter. I think those guys were afraid of maybe other guys. Gleyber Torres has openly talked about how Mendoza, when he was the assistant coach with the Yankees, would get all over him. It doesn't have to be the manager. I agree there has to be consequences, and I agree that there needs to be someone to tell players the truth and the uncomfortable truth. But, I mean, there's different ways to skin a cat. Right now, it's been unsuccessful. You want to say that's the problem? I can't argue with you. And to say Boone is not the main problem, I 100% agree with. To say he's part of the problem, well, there's a problem, and he's part of the team. I think everybody is a part of the problem right now. Everybody this side of Judge and Soto is a part of the problem. And Boone does not escape that blame. Look, I don't think it's his fault necessarily, but I can't bury my head in the sand. I've been a Boone supporter. I am a Boone supporter. I don't want him fired. I honestly don't. It hasn't got to that point yet for me. but I can't watch what I've been watching and that are, and seeing direct play that lies at the feet of the manager and pretend like I'm not watching it. All right, so I'm watching it and I see it. And it's as bad as ever. A couple years ago, I think it was 2021, when they had that stretch of like, it happened like six times in a 20-game span where the runner from second got thrown out trying to advance to third on a ball hit in front of him. It happened like five times. I think Clint Frazier did it twice. And it was just like, what the? I mean, it drove me absolutely nuts. And that was one of those times where it was a little bit like, oh, come on, Boone, get these guys together a little bit. It was in the vein of trying to do too much, but still, like, get it together. But this has been at a different level. Grisham decided to just absolutely not care about a base hit. Volpe didn't want to run. DJ LeMahieu just made a stupid baseball. I mean, in that play, it drove me nuts. You got the young kid who hustles everywhere, who doesn't hustle, and then a cagey veteran who's been all over this league, won batting titles in both National League and American League, making just a stupid play. All he has to do is stop running. That's all he has to do, just stop moving, and they score a run. All Volpe has to do is run through the play, and they score a run. Like, this crap is unacceptable the way they've been playing. Oswald Cabrera getting caught off on a line drive, getting caught off a first one, and then miraculously, DJ LeMahieu, it's a double that would have scored him. Like, those are the things that can't happen. And I think the talk around Boone and what we know is the problem, and it's because there's no consequences. I mean, again, I can't say, like, as much as I'm open to the idea that Boone is creating some sort of atmosphere where this is going on, because it's going on. So I can't deny it. But at the same time, are you telling me that DJ LeMahieu needs consequences to know to stop running? Like, that's going to solve it? Do you think, do you think he thought to himself, oh, I'll just keep running because it doesn't matter? Boone won't get mad. There'll be no consequence for this. Like, do you think he went on the bench and sat down and realized the mistake they made? Do you think Volpe went and sat down? There's a very great story about Derek Jeter. And I know Volpe is not Derek Jeter. I'm not trying to claim he is. But there was a play, and it was in Joe Torre's book that he wrote with the guy from Sports Illustrated with a V. I'll think of his name in a second. I'm losing my mind. Anyway, it's a story of Jeter making that play, the same play. He was at second base, ball hit in front of him, thrown out at third, and Torre's pissed. And Torre's thinking about whether or not to call him right there, or he's going to get him in the clubhouse later after the game and really lay into him. It was a terrible rookie mistake. He has shown to be more than a rookie all year long. It was a terrible mistake. And Jeter just walked into the dugout and sat right next to him and just made it like, I know I messed up. Ultimately, it's on the players to recognize their mistakes. Are you telling me Volpe can't realize he had a mistake there unless he's benched? That's the only way to stop Volpe from one lackadaisical play in a tenure of a year and a half of hustle? Are you telling me that DJ LeMahieu, who has been a veteran in this league, who's won batting titles, who's played hard, who's a gritty nose player that we all loved, where we would have had an absolute revolt if Brian Cashman didn't bring him back after 2020? Are we saying that guy needs the threat of being benched to make smart plays? Is that what we're saying? Gleyber Torres, I'll give you. He benched him for 2 days. All right, maybe it should have been after the first time, the second time. He benched him. Did he do it fast enough for your liking? I guess not. But he benched Gleyber Torres for not running it out. And he didn't defend him with the injury. He didn't say, yeah, he mentioned that Glaber's complaining, but he said, no, it's nothing serious. It shouldn't have impacted him. He said it twice. Aaron Boone could have easily said, listen, he's dealing with something, so I understood. I told him not to run, or we understand why he's not running. Twice he downplayed how significant the injury was and that he should have run. It's something that caught his attention, and then he benched him. And Glaber responded for a couple days before now getting hurt again. But I'm just at a loss when you think, or when we try to say Volpe needs consequences to run through home plate. If Volpe is the kind of player who needs to be benched in order to try and run through home plate to make sure he scores a run, then we don't have the player we hoped we had. And if DJ LeMahieu needs the threat of the wooden spoon to not have a dumb play on the base path, then he's even more finished than we thought. I don't know if that's the answer. We just say it like it's true. I don't know. What I do know is whatever the answer is, Boone hasn't found it. And he needs to. Tim in Norwalk. What's up, Tim?
So much to talk about right now. Good talking to you, C-Mac. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. Man, where's Didi with the Grand Slam in 2000? What year was it? 19? 20?
Who gives a damn? They didn't win the World Series, so what are you bringing up that crap for? So what? It was an awesome moment, and the crowd went nuts, and it's one of the great playoff games I've ever been to when he hit the grand slam, when he hit the three-run home run in the wild card game to turn that game around. Who cares? You know they lost, right?
Well, they won that one. Well, they won
the wild card. Yeah, who cares? Is that, should we hang a banner in Yankee Stadium for that wild card win? Get with it, Tim. All that matters is the World Series, bro.
Well, pretty obviously in the Bronx, yes, definitely. It's like almost Donald Trump is the new Steinbrenner. But anyway,
gotcha.
All right, so talking about this, hey, listen, hats off to the Mets. You know, they're the JV. The Mets have nothing to do with me unless we go to October. I mean, you're going to tell me the 1999 Mets and the 2000 Mets were not the greatest defensive team. And, I mean, when Piazza, a lot of people, like, they do say that was probably one of the greatest home runs besides, you know, Brochus and Tino. But, all right, going back to the present right now.
All right, you're all over the place. So, let's focus on what you want to talk about.
All right. So, anyway, I just got off of work. Sorry.
I hear you.
One, Yankees, I think the away jerseys are jinxing the team. Two, I think this team right now, Aaron Boone is not the problem. I love Aaron Boone. I thought Joe.
What did you just say?
Honestly,
you love Aaron Boone?
I think Aaron Boone is not the problem right now. I think they're on Twitter.
Tim, where have you been? Do you know we have meetings every Friday? I haven't seen you at one, Tim. By myself. I always bring the chips and guac, and I sit there and eat it by myself. This whole time, it could have been me and you, Tim. But go ahead.
All right.
I agree he's not the main problem, but even you would have to agree if we're Boone defenders. You know, right now they're playing they're playing with a lack of effort that's unacceptable. And at some level, you have to put it at his feet on some.
It was cute. Let's put it this way. Now you'll say it. Like right now, you know, obviously the Mets are always going to be the JV. And hats off to the Mets because it's nice. I mean, it's good for New York sports.
We get the condescending talk about the Mets. What do you're a Yankees fan. Let's talk Yankees.
All right, so Yankees right now. Yeah. All right. Aaron Boone is not the problem right now.
Okay.
And Luke Weaver, I think, needs to be the closer right now. And I think we need to trade for Mason Miller and go all out on him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm open
you know,
to that.
I'm sure I swear if they go after Chapman, hopefully they don't. They will never go back.
No, they're never going to go. Chapman quit on the team, and thank you for the call. Chapman quit. They wanted Chapman to come and just throw a bullpen so they could see him before making a decision on the playoff roster. He didn't show up. That's it. Chapman's done. Unless there's a new general manager, but it ain't happening this year. Chapman's done. So don't worry about that. The problem with Mason Miller is be prepared. Like Scar said, be prepared. Because it's going to cost you. The guy's got, I believe it's 4 years of control. He throws 100 plus miles an hour. He could be our closer on the cheap for the next 4 years. It's going to cost you Spencer Jones. Like, that's not a crazy ask. And I guaranteed you, if I didn't hang up on him, if I asked them, would you trade Spencer Jones? It's not going to take Spencer Jones. It might. I mean, Mason Miller throws 102 miles an hour, and he's under control. It might cost you Spencer Jones. That's the kind of thing. I mean, you want to get a closer for the next 4 years on the cheap? It's going to cost you Spencer Jones. So be prepared. I'm open to it, but just prepare yourself that it's going to hurt. That one's going to hurt. Tanner Scott will, you know, might not hurt as bad. Crochet on Chicago might not hurt as bad. You want to go get Mason Miller? It's going to hurt. 888-808-1019. 1 hour down. We'll continue to take your phone calls right after the update on our baseball as we embark into the last 2 weeks, the last two series before the All-Star game. We'll get into the All-Star game snubs. We'll have a little fun with Pete Alonso because, yes, I have an opinion on Pete Alonso and his desperate, burning desire to be in the home run derby. And we'll get to some other things as we can along the way. McMonagle here with you, including a list that has a certain running back as the second best running back behind McCaffrey in the NFL. Who could it be? Believe it or not, I'll tell you later.